Ernest, what's up? Look, I want to put you onto something that's been making waves in the personal finance world. If you've been relying on Mint to manage your finances, I got some news that might startle you at first. Mint is no more. But hold on, because every cloud has its silver lining, and in this case, that lining is Monarch Money. For those of us searching for a robust, user-friendly alternative, Monarch Money is stepping up to the plate. And from personal experience, it's hitting a home run. Let's get personal for a moment. Managing finances can be a maze of confusion, stress, and time consumption. Believe me, I've been there, jumping from one finance app to another, hoping to find that one platform that simplifies everything. Then came Monarch Money. Its ease of use, powerful features, and sleek design transformed my approach to managing finances. What truly sets Monarch apart for me, though, is its collaboration feature. With money being a top Discord trigger for many couples, the ability to seamlessly manage finances with my wife has been a game changer. No extra costs, just shared goals and clarity. But Monarch isn't just about managing your current finances, it's about building your future. Saving for that dream house, your wedding, or a once-in-a-lifetime vacation becomes not just a possibility, but a reality with Monarch's intuitive tools. It's no wonder the Wall Street Journal held it as the best app for savings growth. Monarch Money represents the next evolution in personal finance apps. It's an ad-free haven where your experience is the priority, constantly refined based on real user feedback. It's everything we've been asking for: intuitive, powerful, and relentlessly focused on user satisfaction. Now, for a bit more practicality, Monarch makes transitioning from Mint a breeze, ensuring you can bring all your tags and categories with you. Its intuitive design, customization options, and commitment to privacy and an ad-free experience make it stand out in the sea of competitors. Look, after trying out Monarch for myself, I understand why it's the top-rated personal finance app. And right now, get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/leisure. That's MONARCHMONEY.com/leisure for your extended 30-day free trial. Ernest, what's up? Y'all know I'm big on doing your research, sharing your research, and giving credit to where you found the research. But I always get asked the same question. Where do I start with the research? And the answer is easy. It's our sponsor, Yahoo Finance. Whether I'm tracking the daily movement of my favorite companies, doing technical analysis with their easy-to-use charting platform, or checking balance sheets, Yahoo Finance makes something very complex simplified. For more than 25 years, Yahoo Finance has been the brand behind every great investor. Whether you're a seasoned investor or you're looking for extra guidance, Yahoo Finance gives you all the tools and data you need in one place. They're the number one finance destination, producing a holistic look at the financial news cycle, including breaking news, original editorial perspectives, analyst ratings, independent research, customizable charts, and so much more. You could actually securely link your brokerage accounts for a unified view of your wealth, including your 401k and other investments. A comprehensive perspective is what sets apart great investors. And it's how Yahoo Finance ensures you have the insight to look at your wealth in its entirety. With a community of over 90 million users each month, the real strength is helping you on your way to financial success. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit the brand behind every great investor, yahoofinance.com. The number one financial destination. That's yahoofinance.com. You heard me, yahoofinance.com. Don't wait. Don't hesitate. I use it. You should go over there and start using it now.
There's an economic play. There's an economic play behind police brutality. There's a huge, huge economic play. So every year, cities across the United States of America, small and large, they spend millions of dollars in police brutality claims. Because it's like, this isn't common. This isn't new, right? Like, it happens all the time.
They know it's going to happen.
Right. Even if it's not to this extent where somebody gets killed, somebody might get a black eye, somebody might break somebody's ribs. Like,
Might be wrongfully accused.
Yeah, it's a lot of police, but that's an issue too, but specifically police brutality.
Right.
So police brutality cases, there's millions of police brutality cases all over the country every single year. Most of the time it's settled with some compensation being paid, and that can go from $1,000 to $100 million, like anywhere in between, right? It depends. So now, what people don't fully understand, I think, is that there's billions of dollars that are paid to victims of police brutality every single year.
We hear it all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah. There was a settlement for $40 million. This person got $25 million. Nobody thinks about it. They just hear the number. Nobody thinks about anything else. Where's this coming from?
Yeah. And the crazy, so Chicago, in 2018, $113 million was paid to police brutality.
Yeah, misconduct. Settlements and judgments.
$113 million in just the city of Chicago in 2018.
1 year.
That's amazing. So it's like, where does this money come from? So this is now you start to peel back the layers. Because if it's like, it's like a movie, it's like a movie. Like, you see the Instagram clips and it's like, okay, so now I feel like I'm actually a detective, right? Because it's like, now you got to peel back the layers.
It's weird because at times, like when you hear these settlements, I remember when Amadou Diallo got the settlement, and it was like, yo, it was $40 million or something of that sort. And it was like, that felt like a victory. It felt like, all right, well, he's been compensated for the abuse that he suffered. And then when you look at, like, wait, where did that money come from? It's like, wait, is this really a victory? Should we be celebrating that?
That's the crazy thing about it. Nobody ever thought about where the money comes from. So where does the money come from? The money comes from taxpayers, right? So taxpayers. So that's another thing about police officers. Police officers are public servants, right? We pay, when I say we, taxpaying people of the United States of America pay the salaries and the retirement of the police department. All of that comes from tax dollars.
Yeah.
So now the taxpayers are paying for these payouts.
Right.
That's the first part that people need to fully understand. Yeah, it's like,
even before the payout, right? They have no, so to, you got to understand that part before you even get to the settlement. You've had to go through court, a court case, right? There is no financial responsibility on the side of an officer during a police brutality case. So literally, the taxpayers pay for their trial. So they're paying for the lawyers, they're paying for the judgments, and they're paying for the settlements. Like, there is nothing that they have to do if the act is committed while they're on the job.
Yeah, that's a fact. So now the taxpayers pay for it. So it's like, all right. So now we got peel back even more layers. Mm-hmm. So now, a lot of cities and towns, they have liability policies. So liability, it's like insurance pretty much, right? So it's like, okay, any other insurance policy, you pay a premium. So like, let's say you have a $10 million liability policy. So your premium for that might be $250,000, right? Mm-hmm. So taxpayers are paying the premium because that's where it comes from, the budget. So taxpayers paying $250,000, and then the liability company is paying the $10 million. So that's like, okay, if you get into a situation and you beat up a cop, if you're a cop and you beat up somebody, they sue. Now they win. So now the liability company is liable for that, to pay that.
Right.
So they pay it, but ultimately the taxpayers still paid it in some sort because they actually paid the premium for the policy.
Right.
So, but that wouldn't be that bad.
I was about to say, let's go deeper.
It's like, all right, you're only paying. It's still bad.
Yeah.
Because it's like you are committing a crime. You are actually abusing somebody. And where, even if it's a dollar or 10% of what's being paid, it's still, we're still paying for a taxpayer. So that, but it's like, all right, it's still less. It's not like you're paying the whole thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
But now you got to peel back even one more layer. So it's like, all right, what happens is that most of these cities, towns, and especially as more and more police brutality cases start to be reported, they don't have enough liability. Because you got to think about it, liability companies are a business as well. They're right. Not just going
trying to give away your money.
Yeah, yeah. It's like they cap it. So now it's like there's not enough liability insurance to cover a lot of this, right?
So we need more money.
So now they need more money, additional money in addition to the liability. So where does that come from? So now they have to issue bonds.
Mm.
They have to have bonds, right? So it's like Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, small town in Pennsylvania.
Let's talk about them.
2004, they settled a wrongful death lawsuit for $7.89 million. So $500,000 came from the insurance.
Right.
$7.39 million came from bonds. So the vast majority of it actually came from bonds.
Right. So bonds, in a sense, is like, listen, we're going to pay you back this money over a given amount of time with interest. right? So a lot of times it could be 30 years, sometimes it could be shorter. So we just got to understand that part too. So literally a municipality is saying, listen, we don't have the money, but we'll get it back to you. They're going to raise that money from the good people who live in that city. So it's like, listen, the people who live in these areas, and a lot of times it's over-policed areas. So when we look at the cities, it's over-policed areas. When they're over-policed, there's going to be more incidents. There's going to be more altercations with law officials. So they already know, like, all right, well, we're going to set this budget aside. And if we don't have enough, we're going to get more from the taxpayers.
Yeah. And so what happens, what's going on now is that cities across the United States of America are going into massive debt because of what they're calling it, police brutality bonds. That's what they're pretty much.
Literally, if you Google it, that's what it says.
Police brutality bonds. So that's the crazy thing about the financial industry. They issue bonds for anything. There was bonds for mortgage-backed security for your home.
Yeah.
There's bonds for anything. If you really get creative, you can issue a bond. So now they actually have police brutality bonds, right? So between 2008 and 2017, we did some research. LA, $74 million was paid in police brutality bonds.
Yep.
The insurance, the interest on that was $18
million
to the holders of the bond. And taxpayers, it cost them $89 million.
Right.
So I just want people to understand that. So, all right, LA didn't have enough to pay police brutality cases.
Right. So those are the judgments and settlements.
Right. So over and above what they already have in their budget, or over and above the liability and insurance.
That's the scary part too. Like, we already are saying, listen, we have a budget for it. Let's keep going.
Yeah. So now they have to go to the financial markets and issue bonds worth $71 million.
That's
right. So they take out bonds for $71 million to pay this, because if you know what a bond is, it's like somebody's loaning you money.
Mm-hmm.
for them loaning you money, you're paying it back over a course of time, but it's with interest. So now the people that loaned them the money, people that loaned them $71 million, they got paid an interest of $18
million. We're going to talk about who they are, too, in a sec.
They made money. They made 18. The people that issued the bonds made $18 million on the bonds.
Mm-hmm.
The taxpayers ended up paying for the whole thing, because you have to pay for the bond,
right,
and the interest.
Right.
So the taxpayers ended up paying $89 million.
Right. So you got the bond money, which is the 71, if we're talking about LA, and then you talk about the interest paid, so you combine those two, and that's what the bill is for the taxpayer.
Yep. Milwaukee, during that same time, $26 million in bonds, $3.7 million in interest. The taxpayers paid $29 million. Chicago. I don't know what's going on in Chicago.
Well, Chicago had a lot of high profile cases. One that comes to mind, and we're going to talk about a duration of time. So from like 2010 to 2018, we're talking almost $1 billion paid. They had the Laquan McDonald case, where the young black kid was shot 16 times, and I believe the officer's name was Van Dyke or something like that, got sentenced to 6 years. There was a settlement in that case. So you got a couple of cases in Chicago that happened from 2010 to 2017. They had $709 million in bonds. $709 million. The interest paid on those bonds was $1 billion, with a B. So the taxpayers get the bill for 1.7. This is the crazy part. There was this quote. I was like, "Yo, that is it." I was reading. It was like they said this is like the equivalent of paying your rent with a credit card, like. It's a temporary solution, but the root of the problem is you don't have enough money to pay your bills.
Yeah.
So, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
think about that.
Yeah, that's crazy. I mean, because if you look at it, like Milwaukee paid $3 million interest on a $26 million bond. LA paid $18 million on a $71 million bond. They're small. The interest is smaller,
mm-hmm,
than the amount of money that they borrow. Chicago actually paid more interest than what they... So not only are they issuing bonds, they're issuing high interest. Like,
yep,
credit card, like 35% or something like that. It must be crazy that they,
yeah,
paid $1 billion of interest and they only borrowed $709 million.
Yeah.
And the taxpayers paid for all of that. Taxpayers paid for $1.7 billion. So this is something that's so crazy, because it's like you're paying for police brutality.
Right.
You are.
Yeah.
And this is something, like I said, whether you are black, white, whether you are affluent, whatever, this is something that everybody should be concerned about, because from an economic standpoint, why do you want to pay for rogue cops? Why do you want to pay for that?
You're paying for misconduct.
You're not only paying for it, but you're paying for the interest as well.
Yeah.
So, all right. So now that's the third layer, but here's where it gets really spicy. It's like, all right, so we're talking about bonds and they.
They.
So who's they, right?
Let's get to that.
So it turns out that large banks, investment firms, Wall Street investment firms, small regional banks all play a part in issuing these bonds. Some well-known companies that have played a part, Wells Fargo, Goldman Sachs, Bank of America.
Bank of Montreal.
So they issue police brutality bonds to towns, cities, municipalities. The cities pay them over the course of time to loan them money so they can pay victims. And they actually are making money. So these companies are making money off of police brutality.
Right.
Because they're getting paid interest on the bonds.
And there's a lot of fees that go into doing these bonds, right? So like we said, there's underwriter fees that the banks are going to collect the money on that every time they issue them. So they're going to, every time that there's a case that is a settlement, there's underwriting fees, the bank gets paid.
So not only do you have the first layer that's making money is insurance companies for the liability claims, because insurance companies always make money. There's no way around it. Like, that's how insurance companies operate, right? So now you're paying insurance premiums. So there's insurance policies in place for police brutality. They make money. But even bigger than that, now you have financial institutions that are making money off police brutality bonds, off the interest.
Right.
So, okay. Now we have to look at, now it makes more sense why nothing has changed in the last 50 years. If anything, it's gotten worse, right? Because there's no incentive for it to stop. Not only do the police do not pay themselves, they have no financial responsibility for it at all. So that's one thing.
Like, that's crazy.
The insurance companies is actually making money on it. And now banks and financial institutions are making money on it. So if nobody's losing money as far as the cops, and people are making millions and billions of dollars,
right,
why would there ever be a real incentive
to stop,
to change police brutality?
And in all that, right, if this was chess, right, if we said that those are all the players, we got to figure out where are we at on that chessboard.
Just pawns getting moved around. That's the reality of it. And most people don't realize it. So it's like, all right, okay. So, and there's different ways how cities use it. Like, some cities use bonds as like part of their budget. Some cities use it as an emergency option. Some cities use it after the liability insurance cuts in, but they're still getting used, right? Yeah. So it's like whole economic strategy. This is when we talk about politics, and this is something that people need to be aware of. So it's like, we're not just going give you the problem. Hopefully somebody's listening, a bunch of people are listening,
and our community's listening, so,
and you never know what somebody can do with the information, right? So now it's like, how I see it, we're talking about, we're in a political season, right? And you're asking these politicians, you're demanding these politicians for these things, right? But you, a lot of times you asking them and you demanding them for wrong things. You asking them to put body cameras on these people. It doesn't matter.
But that's crazy. I'm glad you said body cameras, because in my notes I was thinking, like, body cameras, that comes out of the budget too, right? So like, when you say you want these things, they have to get the money to pay for it. So there needs to be a budget that needs to come. So you're paying for those body cameras if you want them. You know what I'm saying? So like, we got to think in sense, like, all right, everything that you're asking for,
you're going to pay for.
You're going to pay for.
So the real, in my opinion, if you want to take a political route, I'm not opposed to politics. If you want to take a political route, right, real legislation that can really make a difference is first hitting police officers when it hurts. So getting cuts from the pension funds, right? The police unions across America is probably the strongest, if not one of the strongest unions,
PBA,
in every city of America. They hardly can ever lose it. They can go to jail and still keep their pension. They hardly ever get fired. Even if they do an egregious act, they like get put on like punishment or death duty a lot of times.
But even when they get fired, so that there's a fine line there, right? And that's where the law comes in. It's like, they can get fired for the offense, but the offense happened while they were on duty. You see what I'm saying? So like, you're still paying for it because it happened while they were part of the force. They could have been fired after it, but they still were doing that crime while they were on it. So technically, your taxpayer is going to pay for it.
Yeah. So actionable items, my opinion, I'm sure you have some ideas. Some. Cutting pension funds, right? For every 100 million that has to be paid out, 10% of the pension fund gets depleted. Yeah. That's an incentive for cops not to be, because you got to realize this, a lot of times, this is the reality of it. racism is real, right? So you're not going to be able to change. You're not going to be able to change somebody's mind. If somebody looks at you as less than a human being, somebody looks at you, you can't change that by doing training, and none of that's going to work. But what people respect more than anything else is money. So if they realize that, look, this is going to affect my money, you're going to think twice about doing something. So let's say it's 100. For every $100 million, 10% of the total pension for everybody, because it got to be across the board, everybody's got to feel the pain, gets deducted. Now the good cops is going to be even more vigilant, and the bad cops is even going to think about it, because it's like, I'm not just going to do nothing crazy because now I'm going to get affected pay.
Yeah, I think the second way we can go about this is having them have individual responsibility. Rather than having the taxpayer pay for it, let it come out of, like you said, let's affect the money. Let it come out of their own individual pension plans. Let it come out of their own individual salaries if there is misconduct, right? If you saw that happening, you would be less likely to commit any type of egregious offense if you know it was going to cost you, right? Because you got to feed your family too.
It's just like the NFL or any other thing. You get fined.
Exactly.
Right? You get fined. You do something in the NFL, you do an illegal hit, you get a $50,000 paycheck. Cut in your paycheck. So yeah, like you said, cops, if you get found guilty, if you have to pay, they're settling it, right? So if for every settlement that you have to pay for, we're going to take $20,000 out of your salary. We're going to cut your salary by 25% for the year. Or, so you know what I'm saying? So now it's like
no overtime pay, all types of things.
So now it's like, okay, you have a financial incentive put in place not to do these things, right? Another thing that they can do is that they can deduct it from the overall police budget,
right?
Which will lower the police budget, which that hurts them, right? Another thing that they can do that I just thought about is I don't understand why cops don't have E&O insurance. Like, there's millions of cops all across the country, from every from doctors, financial advisors. Doctors pay so much money in malpractice insurance, so much money. Like, a doctor might pay $30,000 a year in malpractice insurance. He might not ever do anything wrong, but that's the cost of being a doctor, because when a doctor does do something wrong, it's all pulled together. Just like a financial advisor has E&O insurance, which stands for errors and omission insurance. So the financial advisor might not do anything wrong his whole entire career. But if something happens and, you know, a complaint is filed, then they have E&O insurance, which every financial advisor has to carry E&O insurance, right? So now, like any other type of insurance, you got millions of people putting it towards the pot. It comes out of that. So why can't cops have E&O insurance? Yeah. $200 out of every single cop's paycheck has to go to E&O, malpractice, whatever you want to call it, insurance. So now you've taken $200 a paycheck out of millions of cops' paychecks. That alone could probably pay for at least half of these police brutality cases.
Probably more than that.
It's going to come out of y'all. Like,
right. Just because what you said is so important, that it'll be more than that, right? Because we're not talking about every city in America. We're talking about overpopulated cities with police presence, right? So if there's a large police presence in that city, then these things are more likely to happen. And where those things happen, in the cities that they're predominantly people that look like myself and Shadi, straight up.
Yeah, and when you're talking about voting, once again, when you're talking about voting,
that's important.
You have to, it's not good enough just to vote. It's not good enough just to, you have to enact real policy change. Like, these are real policy changes.
Before they can even vote, right? Like, I know everybody, this is a year that the census has come out. You have to fill that out, y'all. Like, you got to fill that out. Fill out the census. Let them know who you are. So then you can actually vote and actually get elected officials in positions who have your best interest in mind, man. I've seen people with this. It's like, I got my census. Whatever. What is that? I don't even know what to do with that.
Another thing is that it could be legislation put in place where no financial institution can benefit. And if they are going to issue bonds, it has to be 0% interest. That way, it's really no incentive You're not going to issue a bond if it's 0% interest. So it's going to be extremely harder, because now it's just easy. Like, all right, we get in trouble. We go to Wells Fargo. They're going to cut us a check. We're going to pay it back. It's not coming from us. Yeah. It's coming from taxpayers anyway. So who cares? Wells Fargo doesn't care because they're making money. The police department doesn't care because it's coming from the taxpayers. The only one that's fronting this bill is taxpayers. So not only are taxpayers paying the salary of cops, they're paying for the mistakes of cops as well.
Yeah. On a daily basis. And like, that's the part that people really got to understand. Like, if you're paying taxes, yeah, it's cool. Like, all right, we're paying for schools, but yeah, you're also paying for misconduct. Straight up.
That's a fact, man. So You know, it's a crazy system. We can go on and on about this, but like I said, and it's like for those that's saying like, all right, we can't vote. We shouldn't vote. I'm not telling anybody what to do politically. We're not a political show. I'm just saying, as far as, instead of just giving you problems, these are some real life solutions that you can. Now, how you go about it is up to you. Like I said, we provide the information.
Applications
and,
on you.
You know, if you're a young leader, or if you're an old leader, and if you spark something, whether it's through community mobilization, whether it's through boycotts of these institutions that issue these bonds, whether it's through political action, that can be debated for a different day, a different show. But you know, the first thing is to be aware of what's going on. So yeah,
we went over that like all last week. We just kept saying that over and over. Everybody's like, knowledge is power. The more you know, the more you know. Yo, the real issue is that knowledge is power when it's applied. So now that you have the knowledge, we provided some knowledge for you. Hopefully, we peeled back some layers that you were unaware of. Now it's up to you. Now what do you do with this? What do you do with it? You got, where do you apply it?
That's a fact. So in the next segment, we're gonna switch topics, but stay in the same lane, and we're gonna talk about investing. We're gonna talk about making money, but from a different twist. So
yeah.
Let's get into it. All right. So now we're gonna go into investing. That's what we, you know, people always tune into. Shout out to Ian. Market Mondays, number one stock show on YouTube.
A whole vibe.
Shout out to Wall Street Trapper, bro. Shout out to everybody that we had on the show to talk about investing. Shout out to Quentin Martin, the first stock market show that we've ever done.
Mm-hmm.
That was over a year ago. So we talk about investing a lot, right? But it's just like now we're in a time of being socially conscious. We're in a time of actually, you know, and it doesn't, everybody's not socially conscious, but I'm just saying, as far as a lot of people are starting to become socially conscious. So yeah, a lot of people grapple, because we did a show last week, shout out to Mice on, about, you know, the prison system.
Yep.
And it's like, all right, you know what I mean, like, I don't feel comfortable investing in companies that's investing in prison, or it's like, now it's police brutality. Yeah. And you're finding out there's a whole financial play behind that.
I think the episode opened the doors, because like a lot of people didn't even realize that. And shout out to Mice on, because I see him on the field and he was in Kentucky with the Breonna Taylor case, and now he's in Minnesota with the George Floyd case too. So shout out to Mice on, who's doing incredible work.
Shout out to my song for sure. So, all right. One thing that we have not talked about so far on the podcast is socially responsible investing.
SRI.
Yes, socially responsible investing. So this is an interesting conversation, because it's actually a really big thing. And it's been around for a very long period of time. But so there are investors, right, that have social hangups about different things, whether it be about the environment,
mm-hmm,
whether it be about tobacco,
mm-hmm,
whether it be about gambling, whether it be about
war. War is another one.
Weapons of mass destruction.
Yep.
Prison.
Mm-hmm.
Companies that benefit off of prison.
Health.
Healthcare.
Right? Anybody investing in tobacco, alcohol.
Women. A bunch of different things, yeah, that people, so it's like a lot of times it's like, you know, some people, and I'm not taking a side either way. Some people's like, you know, I'm gonna invest and just get my bread, get my money, and it is what it is. And then some people was like, you know, I kind of want to still invest, make money, I believe in that,
yeah,
but I still have some moral issues.
Yeah, your moral compass is going on
that I don't necessarily want to invest in certain companies.
So that's fair.
Yeah, no, I'm, that's like fair. I'm not saying it's not.
Yeah.
So for that, there are actually funds. There's actually funds. Now, like I said, the financial, when you start to learn more about everything, it's like ice cream. There's a different flavor for every single person. Yeah. So there's actually funds, ETFs and mutual funds in place for socially conscious investors.
Yeah, I had to peel back the layers on this, because I was like, what? You texted to me. I'm like, I never heard of it. All right, let's do some research.
Yeah, for sure. So, you know, there's a few, like I said. So those are the different topics, like environment, gambling, tobacco, alcohol, prison, social justice, and religion. That's a whole different conversation. We're going to talk about that. But so just to kind of give you a few, there's ESGU.
Mm-hmm.
ESGU is an ETF, a socially conscious ETF that does not invest in any company that has anything to do with weapons, tobacco, jails, even though they actually did have a private prison in their ETF, and then they found out and it was a mistake and they kicked it off. So it's like, even that, it's like, you know, you find out, you try to get the kosher hot dog.
Yeah,
and you
the
find
morality out police.
Like, it was made in a pig slaughtering house. It's like, it's so crazy. But that's an ETF, and that ETF has actually done pretty well. you know, considering, because a lot of times it's the performance of these things aren't as high as other ones. Mm-hmm. But that one has done pretty well. Its 52-week high is $75, and its 52-week low was $40 a month ago. So in March it was $40. Right now it's $68. So it's up pretty nicely in a two month time frame. Another one is SSGA, which is a woman diversity ETF. They like invest in companies that hire a majority women or have women CEOs. It's like it's focused around women. Yeah. There's another one called CRBN, which is a low carbon environmental friendly ETF. Right. So there's a variety. Like you can just Google socially conscious funds and like kind of just play around with it in different filters, and you can see like, you know, what kind of fund you're looking for, you know, with the situation.
It's interesting, man. It's interesting because I'm thinking to myself, like, how many investors, right, are not willing to compromise their values to make money? And when I think of investors, I'm like, you know what? I think the moral thing is like they just want to make money.
Yeah.
They don't put everything else aside.
Well, I think, you know, people, and myself included, you know, I'm not preaching from the choir.
Yeah.
We conveniently get blind.
Right.
Conveniently get blind. Because it's like, you know what I'm saying? Like, you might see something, and it's like, it's not that bad.
Yeah. It's like if you were anti-war, right? And it was like, yeah, Boeing's at $97, right? But I don't want to invest in any company that has deals with any making machines or any type of thing that could help in the development of weapons of mass destruction or help in war. There goes that morale. It's like, wait, well, this is a good buy, right? This is a good buy at $97. Is it worth it? You know what I'm saying? Like, I think most people are thinking, let's just make money.
Or they just don't really think about it. Not really thinking about it from that standpoint. It's like, yeah, you know, Boeing has government contracts. Are you thinking that maybe that government plane is sending a drone and killing an innocent child in Syria? You're not really looking too far into it. You could, it's available, but it's a lot easier
to turn the blind eye.
Just turn a blind
eye. Yeah,
turn the blind eye. This is what happens in a variety of different things.
Yeah.
You don't want to see certain things. Like you're walking down the alley, you see what's going on, and you turn around and you walk the other way.
A lot of times.
Most of the time.
Yeah.
Most of the time.
I mean, for your own safety, a lot of times.
And like I said, we're not here to shame anybody.
Nah.
But I'm just saying, we just want to provide some information for some people
right.
that may want to take a higher level of morality.
Right.
In that standpoint, and may want to take a higher level of weeding out their investments. Just give them options. That's the thing with Ernie Lee. We just here to just provide information. Like a lot of times people don't fully understand that, and they don't even know that exists. An option.
Exactly. So it's like there are a lot of people in this, I guess, the quote unquote woke stage, right? So it's like, yo, if you're woke, let it be in all assets of your life, right? Not just in your individual things that you're doing on day to day, but even in your investing. And this is one of those things, like you said, prior to this, I wasn't thinking about it. I had no idea.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
But then that brings us to another conversation. We talked to Chelsea again. Shout out to Mike Song. Last week's episode was about the prison system. We didn't fully go into the finances of publicly traded companies.
Mm.
But so there's prison stocks, like private prison companies that are traded on the stock exchange.
Mm-hmm.
So a few of them are CoreCivic, which is CXW, and Geo Group, which is GEO. That's their symbol.
The crazy thing about CoreCivic, and this is crazy that you said that, we didn't even speak about this, but Darrell Freeman, shout out to Darrell Freeman. If you don't know Darrell Freeman, go Google him. I don't gonna tell you his background, but a very successful man in the world of technology. He called me. He said, "Yo, I love that episode. The CEO of CoreCivic is my next door neighbor."
Oh yeah.
He was like, "Yo, it's a big business, and I'm glad y'all talked about it."
He loved my song episode?
Yep, loved it. Sent me the message and I was like, "Wow, that's incredible." He was like, "Yo, it's a big business. It's a city. Literally, you got to think of these prisons, these private prisons as cities. They need everything that a city needs." And when you look at it like that, it's like, "Damn, he's right."
Yeah.
And his next-door neighbor is the guy who is in charge of that.
Well, there you have it. So, yeah, those are two private prison companies. Now, the crazy thing about those stocks, so it's been, even on the episode, Mike Song had said that private prison stocks skyrocketed after Trump got elected. That is true. Both of those companies, I think, went up over 100% in the year following Trump's election. But they've actually been down for the last, like, 3 years, 4 years. Like, their five-year chart is not really impressive,
mm-hmm.
which is a good thing. I mean,
right.
You know, but just wanted to throw that out there. We have to tell both sides of the story. So as an investment, they haven't really, they're not booming. They're not booming right now.
Which is good, which means that there's less people going to prison.
Well, I don't know if there's less people going to prison, but for whatever reason, their stock is just not doing well. There could be a variety of different reasons why their stock isn't doing well, but the stock has not really performed. But what a lot of people don't fully understand is that a lot of people are invested in, especially CoreCivic, up until last year at the very least, a lot of people are invested in CoreCivic without even knowing it. Because through your 401k, through your IRA, through your pension plan. So Vanguard and BlackRock were the two biggest holders, I think they still are, of private prisons stocks. BlackRock, Vanguard, two of the biggest mutual fund companies. Yes. Everybody loves Vanguard because they have, no, this is what I'm saying. It's a lot of,
you talk about
it's a lot of right and wrong in life, right? People love Vanguard because it's like, it's a no load fund and it's pretty much free to invest and it's cheap. And they're the biggest holder of prison stocks, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
They also have a lot of 401k accounts. BlackRock has a lot of 401k accounts, right? So CoreCivic, CXW, was in a lot of these, probably still are in a lot of these 401k makeups. Because when you invest in a 401k, nobody knows what they're investing in a 401k. You have probably three, like 401k is like a menu and they give you like 20 different options of how to invest, right? Like 20 different funds.
Mm-hmm.
Now within one fund, there's like 100 different stocks inside of a fund. So if you have like three different funds, you have like 300 different stocks inside of your 401k that you're invested in.
Yeah, you could do a research on all of them.
Now, I guarantee you nobody knows any of those companies. Nobody knows any of those companies, right? Because you never ask. It's not like just listed as soon as when you find, they just tell you the name of the company. So it'll be like Vanguard 2020 fund or Vanguard high interest bond fund or Vanguard small cap value fund, right?
Yeah.
That's the name of the fund. But inside of the small cap value fund is about 140 different stocks.
Yeah. And that's when you get that big pamphlet that comes to your house, like that probably nobody ever goes through.
Yeah.
And there's a bunch of these stocks and you're like, all right, well, did I make money or not? Yeah, pretty much.
Pretty much.
You know what I'm saying? Nobody's individually looking into 140 different stocks and then actually researching those stocks to see if they align with their values and moralities. It's just not happening.
No, it's not. But you can't say that you didn't know now, at least, because we told you.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you're interested in it, you can do some further research. But so I just wanted to talk about the prison thing because we did speak about that last week.
Yeah, and there's some other things to know about these SRIs. They tend to have a higher fee than regular funds. And so I was like, well, it doesn't even make sense. Why? Well, the mutual fund has the person who's providing the fund actually has to do more research. So there's more work that the person has to do, right? If they're going to do things that match your core values and your moralities, it's like they have to find ethical things that will work for you. So there's a little bit more research. So the fees tend to be a little bit higher. And there's a site that you can go if you're into social responsible investing. Socialfunds.com is the website. So you can go research on yourself. So that's one thing that you should do. Obviously, do the research and then know your values. A lot of people don't know their own values. So like when they're trying to invest, it's like, well, I believe in this. Know your own values before you're going to go into this type of fund. All right. So do the research. I just gave you the website. And another thing is, a lot of times, and we've said this.
What's the name of the website again?
Socialfunds.com. So you can go there on your own leisure and do some research there. But one of the things that it brought to my mind is like, we talk about diversifying when we're investing, right? But like this type of fund doesn't, it kind of doesn't allow you to do that, right? Because if you're aligning everything with your values, isn't everything kind of going to be the same if you're
investing? No, you can invest in a variety of different companies that still align with your values.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know what I'm saying? It could be different industries. Like, it's just harder, like you said, because it's like, you really got to go through every single fine comb. Because it's like, all right, you're investing in a tech company, but is this tech company providing software for weapons of mass destruction?
Right.
So now it's just so much more intensive research that you have to do, which is the fund manager's job. But you can still invest in a variety. Like you can invest in tech. You can invest in, farming. You can invest in financial institutions. Like you can invest in different companies. It's just that those different companies have to be in line with what you feel comfortable with.
I would imagine that these funds are managed by very, very small companies. This feels like a niche thing that like very small companies do.
No, actually, Vanguard has.
Well, right, right, right. You're right. You're right.
Vanguard.
Okay. That's a big one.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
But so going to what you just said as far as the niche. So there's different layers of socially responsible fund as well. Like I said, Earn Your Leisure, we just here to provide as much information as we possibly can to every, because there's so many different types of people in this world. So you got the socially conscious people that don't want to invest in those things. But religion is a huge thing in this world. And now you have religious people who can't or do not want to invest in certain things because of their religion. So now you have funds for that. It's fun for everything. So you have Christian funds, like Guidestone is a Christian fund, and that's dedicated to invest in companies that have core Christian values. Kind of a vague situation, but you know, that's what that's designed for. Okay. You can do, do some research and kind of figure out.
Okay.
Do you have Ave Maria, which is a Catholic fund? There's a few Catholic funds. So Ave Maria is Rising Dividend Fund. That's a one of their popular funds, and that's a Catholic fund. So, you know, Catholics, they're really big on, like, you know, abortion and a couple other things. That's like real sticklers for the Catholic Church. So they only invest in companies that align with Catholic values.
Mm-hmm.
And then so just coming off the month of Ramadan, we have a large listenership all over the world, and that includes America, which is their huge Muslim population. There's a huge Muslim population in Africa, huge Muslim population in Europe, of course, the Middle East. So we have to say assalamu alaikum to all of the Muslims that that tune in. And one thing about Islam is that that's actually, you know, part of the religion is Sharia law. Sharia law. So people have a misunderstanding a lot of times of what Sharia law is. We're not going to go into a full, but part of it is investing. Like, there's actually guidelines. So it's not really up for, like, vague interpretation. Like, if you really are a hardliner in the religion, there's financial guidelines of how you can invest. So, like, interest is outlawed in Muslim countries.
Okay.
So shout out to Inez, our good friend. She's from Egypt. And I was over her house yesterday, and she was telling me that there's no mortgages in Egypt. No mortgages in Egypt. You just buy the land. So interest is outlawed. You're not allowed to charge anybody interest. That's one thing, right? Okay. Of course, if you're familiar with the religion, you know that, you know, alcohol is outlawed. A variety of different factors. Gambling.
Okay.
There's no gambling. Gambling is outlawed. So in Islam, you have halal and haram. Haram is forbidden. Halal is allowable. That's like deemed okay. So now you have.
I got that. I actually looked that up. That was crazy. On the Jay Electronica album.
Okay. Yeah. So now you have halal funds. One of the most popular funds is called the Amana Fund. So the Amana Fund is a mutual fund based around Sharia law, which is halal and allows Muslims that if you wanna follow those guidelines, that you can actually invest. And the Amana Fund only invests in halal companies, meaning companies that don't partake in gambling, companies that don't partake in interest-bearing accounts, companies that don't partake in alcohol, a variety of other things as well. So that's something that is a big play as well, because, like I said, I mean, no matter what religion you follow, if you're Jewish, they have kosher funds as well.
Right.
It's the same thing. Kosher and halal kind of the same thing as far as, like, the meaning of it, where, like, Jewish people have, like, if you're a strict hardline Jew, you are only really supposed to indulge in kosher. But kosher is more than just food.
Right. I think that's a crazy misconception that people only think it's a food thing.
It's the same thing with halal. Like, you see the halal guys or the halal truck. So most people, when they think about halal, especially, like, if you live in New York City or, like, a major, like, it's pretty popular halal food. And that is a certain way where the food, the animals, like, are, you know, slaughtered, and you say a prayer and there's certain things. It's the same thing with kosher, but that's only part of it. So, like, with the kosher, that's only part of it. Like, you know, as far as, like, the same kind of idea. And like I said, that's true with a variety of different religions, where it's like, you know, depending on what religion you subscribe to, that might, you know, have a play in how you choose to invest.
Yeah.
So those are all things to think about as well.
I know they're listening like, yo, damn, Shotty sound like a history professor. This dude literally studies religion, like no joke. And anybody that knows, has ever had a conversation with him, they know like he loves talking about religion. Shout out to Val, who always brings it up.
Shout out to Val.
She always talks about how you've taught us so much about the world. But yeah, I know this is one of your sweet points.
You know, history has been my favorite subject since I was a little kid.
Definitely.
I took a history of religion class when I was in college, and I never studied, never got one book and got an A+, because I just already knew so much about religion and all religions. I'm just fascinated by, you know, I think it's interesting to learn about Christianity, Islam, Judaism, Buddhism, Sikh. I have friends that are all different religions. And, you know, for me personally, I don't think that there's any one religion that is reigns supreme. It's whatever, you know, you feel comfortable with. I'm not here to judge, but I just, you know, I always found religion interesting because I realized how touchy it is. Mm-hmm. And it's like people die over their religion. People will kill you over their religion. And it's like you can't play around. That's why we don't really talk about religion too much. Yeah,
some people don't want to be separated from.
You can't play around with religion. So it's like, it's interesting. It's interesting to me. It's fascinating. So I try to learn as much about religion as I possibly can, because I feel like a lot of times, most of the time, we follow whatever religion we're born into.
Right.
And that's not really a belief system. That's more superstition. When you believe in something that you don't fully understand, it's superstition.
You've been bred to believe that.
Stevie Wonder said that. So now when you have a full understanding of things, not only does it open your perspective and make you more open to the world, but at least even if the thing that you do fully believe in, you can actually believe in it,
right,
as opposed to just doing it because everybody in your family does it, and you feel like you're going to be cursed if you don't do it.
You've done the research on your own. You've allowed yourself to critically think. You've allowed yourself to analyze, and like that's the goal in life, right? Allow yourself and allow others to freely think and freely choose. You know what I'm saying? Like I think that is, as an educator, like that's the number one thing I'm looking for. Can I allow these students to critically think for themselves? And we should have that same mindset when it comes to our family and our children.
That's a fact. So the last thing with the stocks, this is pretty disturbing, and it's all a financial play. So now people might want to invest in black owned companies. It's like, why black?
Who are they?
Invest in black. But from an investing standpoint, it's like, what if I want to invest money in the stock market, but I want to invest in black-owned companies?
A lot of people want to do that, right? We buy black. Shout out to them.
Yeah, shout out to We Buy Black. Those are my people. Good people.
Yeah.
So, all right. It's like a black-owned fund. I couldn't find any. Like a black ETF or a black mutual fund that only has black companies. I couldn't find any.
No. Yeah. No, and maybe there are some. I couldn't find any either, but maybe there are some.
Well, I think the reason why there are none that I could find is that out of 4,000 stocks on the New York Stock Exchange, 12 are black companies. 12. That is so disturbing. That's a whole different conversation. You're talking about economic, and that's what people don't fully understand. It's like black people are so far behind. It's just, it's amazing. It's like running a marathon and you like 23 miles in and you just started the race. And somebody else is 23 miles in. So it's like,
we're on a treadmill.
That's not even,
there's a marathon going on. We're on a treadmill.
That's not even 1%.
Yeah.
That's less than 1%.
12
out of 4,000 companies are publicly traded.
Yeah.
So we're talking about economic empowerment, and it's like a lot of times it's on a small scale. When you start looking at it from a large scale, as far as like companies and billions of dollars and things of that nature, and like publicly traded companies, there's 12 out of 4,000.
Yeah.
Like diversity.
Yeah. I mean, it's crazy. And during the research, I actually, you know, I was proud to find out that I'm actually invested in one. Well, not invested, but I do business with one at least. And I'm looking at the other ones. I'm like, I don't even know these. So you want to run down a few?
Yeah, I got four that people might know. Citizens Bank, with their symbol is CZBS.
Yeah, that's who I actually have my mortgage through. So not that I'm invested in it, but we do business together.
Yeah, Citizens is a black-owned bank.
Yeah.
4-1, like the number 4-1, and that is formerly used to be Urban One, which is a radio. No, it's Urban One. 4-1 is Urban One, and it used to be Radio One.
Okay.
It's a radio syndicate.
No, no.
RLJ, which is a lodging company owned by Robert Johnson, former owner of BET, former owner of the Bobcats.
Yep. First black billionaire.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
And then Carver Bank, another black-owned bank. There's a few black-owned banks.
Yeah.
Carver Bank.
Which is encouraging. Yeah. That they have, we have black-owned banks that are being publicly traded.
That's important.
Yeah.
You want to list a few others?
Well, we have the same ones. All
right. Yeah. So not only is it discouraging that there's only 12, even more so discouraging than that is like you look at these charts, looked at all their charts, none of them have good charts. None of them. None of them, you look at Ian's technical analysis would be buys as far as if you want to make money.
Mm-hmm.
They're not doing well. As far as on the stock, their stock has not done well for 5 years. Like you look at the 5-year chart, and it's not good.
Yeah. And it's going to be tough to find their, a lot of these companies have a 10-year chart or a 20, even sometimes it goes back to the history, 30-year chart. A lot of these companies, that doesn't exist. It just doesn't exist.
Yeah, I don't even know what to say about that. It's just, that's something just to like, as far as working forward to something.
But that's, I mean, a lot of that has to do with a lot of systematic things that were put in place so that it couldn't exist. We don't want to ignore that fact, right? So having our own private owned company or even having a black owned bank, systematically in America for years, that wasn't even a possibility. So there are reasons why we don't have a long history of it. So let's not ignore that fact. But like I said, when we go back to the history of some of these companies that we look at, we do look at the 10-year chart. We do look at 20-year or the history of the company's chart. And that's just not available right now for these companies.
Yeah. So, you know, that's some information if you're interested in socially responsive funds, religious funds, black-owned companies. You know, just a different take on investing, because we talk about investing a lot. So we just want to just give people a different take on it. And you can kind of do whatever you want with the information. But, you know, hopefully that shines some light, good and bad, because everything's not going to be a good story.
Yeah.
Sometimes, you know, it's just the news is just that we have to just report what it is. And it's not always encouraging. But sometimes you need stuff that's not encouraging to encourage.